It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, right here on the Talk Station. And again, you're invited to call in with your questions. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are standing by. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, we thought we would talk about ownership in real property, the different kinds of deeds that are recognized in the state of North Carolina. You know, a deed is not just a deed. There are different kinds of deeds that then represent, if you will, define the rights, obligations, inheritance rights, if you will, relative to that real property. And so there are different ways to own property. And to rattle off some of the terminology that we'll be talking about today and maybe again into next week, you have tenants by entirety, you have a life estate deed, you have tenants in common deed, you have joint tenancy with right of survivorship deed, you of course have deeds that can be in a particular LLC or corporation. So there are quite a few ways to own real property. Real property is land. Any improvement to the land is
the buildings.
The buildings, and the fences and the outbuildings and the pools and all of those kinds of things.
Right.
Those are a part of that deed. They are an appurtenance or improvement thereto. Wes and I often get the question, you know, well, I have a deed to the lot that I bought.
Yes.
My husband and I bought the lot before we retired. We built the house, but you know, Cecil, I don't think I ever got a deed to the house.
Right, right.
Where is my deed to the house?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, you don't have a deed to the house. You have a deed to the land.
You may have a mortgage on the house.
You may have a mortgage on the house.
Yeah.
And then, of course, but there are different ways.
People confuse deed and title a lot.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of these words and concepts can be confusing. And even we lawyers many times have to go back to the school books in order to look things up. Wes and I actually were doing that just yesterday about a, you know, I'm off the subject here, but the equity and redemption concept relative to a deed.
Right.
There's
a lot of ins and outs.
Lots, right. Of course, absolutely.
So when you talk about, you know, these terms deed or title, you know, the deed is the document. I mean, that is the piece of paper, basically, that conveys the title. But a lot of times folks say, well, I hold a deed to. It's the same thing as saying I hold title to. You know, but title, also, we get into issues about how strong is your title. Is there a competing title, chain of title, you know, all of these terms that we talk about. So we're going to demystify some of that today and talk about the different types of conveyances and deeds and title and those types of things.
Okay.
And this is a subject matter that is, that's quite involved. For instance, another big question is I don't have a deed, Mr. Harvell, but I inherited this property from my mother and father 25 years ago. I inherited this tract of land. And I've always wondered why I never got a deed, you know, because I really don't have a deed, but the title, property tax title comes to my house in my name.
Right.
How did I get this property? Well, see, property land can pass to oneself with not necessarily through a deed. It can pass through a will.
Right.
And so, or through an estate. And so that is how that client got title to their property. Part of the title search is not just existing in the registry of deeds, but the title clerk or the lawyer doing the title is absolutely going to visit the estates division of the clerk of court and review any deaths relative to the chain of title, and will very likely see where the property passed according to an estate. That's a good title. You just don't have a deed.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you don't have a means to convey it. You don't really need to. The will did that.
The will did that. Yeah. The will conveyed the title. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's a very fundamental rule, Ben, that a lot of people do not know.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks that I go to my lockbox and I pull out my deed.
Right.
You know. And a lot of times property is not conveyed by deed.
Somebody
conveyed through inheritance.
Okay, they inherited the property. They inherited that. They want to sell it now.
Mm-hmm.
They will
then have a deed done.
The person who's buying it would then.
The seller.
The seller would. Okay.
The seller would have a deed.
Mm-hmm.
But the title into the seller came from some family member's estate.
Okay.
All right.
I get that.
Uh-huh. Now, we always start at the top, I guess, with one that might seem to be a little on the simple side, and that's, of course, tenants by entirety. Tenants by entirety is title or a deed to a property between a husband and wife. And the question arises, well, you know, what if we were not married at the time that we got the property?
Right. Which is certainly a growing trend these days.
Correct.
Right?
Okay. We were in a relationship and bought the property together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you bought the property together, the lawyer would not have been able to put on the deed John Doe and wife Mary Doe.
Right.
Because they really were not married at that time. So he's going to put, or she's going to put on the deed, John Doe and Mary Doe.
Mm-hmm.
But not the word wife or husband. And even without the word wife or husband, at the time that that deed was signed and recorded, they were not, the fact is that they were not married.
Right.
And therefore, it is not a tenants by entirety deed.
Mm-hmm. So what is it?
It is a tenants in common deed.
Mm-hmm.
And they own it, tenants in common, which we're going to discuss in a few minutes. Now, once they get married, then John and Mary can go to a lawyer and reconvey out of John Doe and Mary Doe to John Doe and wife Mary Doe.
Right.
Or Mary Doe and husband John Doe.
Mm-hmm.
And this will now make that property tenants by entirety because they are in fact now married at the time that that deed is signed.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it would now become tenants entirety property. So tenants entirety property is a deed between married people.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they are married, then you cannot have the advantages of that deed.
Mm-hmm.
And there are significant advantages, and I'm talking too much this morning. I'm going to let Mr. Collins chime in there and tell us about the advantages of a tenants by the entirety deed, because they are significant.
I would imagine another way this comes up is often in a second marriage, and you have somebody who's already owned the house, for example. And,
right.
And there may be a desire to create that, or maybe not, to create that tenants by entirety.
That's right. You know, just to go back what Cecil was referring to, if you're not married, but you own property together, and both, let's say, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend are on the on the deed, then that's going to be, you know, tenants in common deed, and, you know, perhaps they got a loan for the property as well, so there's a mortgage on the property. You know, where things get a little more complicated would be, well, obviously, if they split up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one thing. Let's say that one of them were to pass away. Well, then we've got girlfriend and boyfriend who were on the mortgage and maybe sharing the cost, but only girlfriend survives,
right,
for example. But that one half interest in the boyfriend's name passes under, if he has a will, under his will, if not through intestacy. So if he doesn't have a will, it would not go to the girlfriend at all. So the girlfriend could find herself in a place where she only owns half of the property.
But she owns all the mortgage.
But she's on the entire mortgage.
Yeah.
So how would the girlfriend and boyfriend under that scenario protect themselves against the possibility of, you know, one of them passing away so as to, you know, not be responsible for the entire indebtedness but only have title and half the property? They could do that, you know, through joint wills if they wanted to do it that way. But, you know, will can be revoked at any point in time You know, mm-hmm. the girlfriend could do it without the boyfriend's knowledge, that kind of thing. You could do a deed that's a joint with right of survivorship deed, which basically indicates that in the event that either one of them dies, title to the whole property goes to the survivor.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one way, you know, to address that. So, you know, so there are some issues there that get more complicated when we're talking about tenants in common interest and then throwing into that joint tenants for the right of survivorship.
Right.
But then kind of going over to the tenants by entirety type title in property that Cecil was referring to, which is, again, the marital interest. There are, you know, significant benefits there.
Mm-hmm.
And if property is purchased during the marriage that is in husband and wife's name, then it's automatically tenants by entirety. So it automatically, number one, upon the death of either husband or wife, goes to the survivor
mm-hmm.
immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what your will says. It
right.
could say something completely different. That, by operation of law, trumps the will, the tenants by entirety ownership interest. Also, let's say that husband or wife had a judgment against them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they had, you know, taxes that weren't paid, or they have, you know, they owed on a contract that they couldn't pay, or
mm-hmm.
just any kind of judgment. Well, the judgment creditor would not have the right to attach their judgment lien to that tenants by entirety property.
Right.
And that's pretty powerful.
But if it were in tenants in common, they could.
To half of it.
Yes, right, to half of it.
To the half of it owned by the judgment debtor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one of the things that we're often asking our clients in the event they're a defendant in a lawsuit. How do you own your property?
Mm-hmm.
How do you own your home? You're
right.
married. Is it tenants by entirety? I mean, usually it's going to be,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But again,
if there's a judgment just against one party,
yeah.
then the judgment creditor cannot require that property to be sold to satisfy their judgment. So that's, you know, pretty powerful element of the law as it relates to tenants by entirety ownership.
More to come in a moment here with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, here on the Talk Station, FM 107 at AM 1240. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And if you would like to call in with your question, you may do so.
Call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
And we were just talking, Wes, about some of the advantages of tenants by entirety, some
right.
of the some of the things that are, that go along with that. And
right, right. Well, yeah, we were talking about, you know, the kind of the big ticket item with regard to judgment
mm-hmm.
Creditors.
Mm-hmm.
And judgments against just the husband or the wife, and how that tenants by the entirety property would not be subject to that lien.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something that's very important in what we do pretty much on a day in and day out basis.
And really one of the only kinds of titles where that would apply.
Mm-hmm.
If a judgment creditor has a judgment against someone who owns property, who is not married, say again, the boyfriend and the girlfriend
right.
we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't get married. They own the property 50-50. That's a tenants in common. I know we haven't discussed that yet,
mm-hmm.
but that's what that is. They're not married.
Mm-hmm.
And there then is a judgment against the boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Then that judgment creditor is able to go against the 50% ownership of that boyfriend.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, they have, you know, some hurdles to cross over,
mm-hmm.
but they're not insurmountable hurdles depending on how aggressive the judgment creditor wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
What they would do there,
yes.
you know, just to kind of finish that out,
yep.
I don't know, you may have been going there, but
uh-huh.
what would be, of course, their rights would only be against that 50%,
mm-hmm.
so they would have the right to conduct a sale of that 50%. Now, here's the question. Who's going to buy the 50% interest? Who wants to be 50% owner with the girlfriend?
The other one who owns it.
Well, maybe. But you know, let's say it's the bank
mm-hmm.
that is a judgment creditor. Well, they would then potentially high bid on the property, so then they have title. So then they would just do what's called a petition to partition,
mm-hmm.
which is a forced sale of the whole.
Of the whole thing, yeah.
It's a right. two-step process, but they still would have the right to get to the point where they could force the sale of the property, even against the wishes of the girlfriend who didn't have anything to do with the boyfriend's debt.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely the case. And those facts are completely different
mm-hmm.
if they are married And if the tenant, if the title is tenants by entirety.
Right.
Now the husband can have that judgment. The wife could have a judgment. And the creditor is not going to be able to attach that property. That, Ben, is an astonishing and very significant law.
Right. It is.
Yes.
It is.
Absolutely.
Extremely significant.
Now, when the husband dies, the property, by operation of law, goes to the wife. The judgment that the husband had is alive and well and kicking in his estate, but again, not against that property, because that passed to her by operation of law. And they would be limited to the assets that are in the husband's name in the estate.
Outside of the that property.
Outside of that property.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That property is sanctified, if you will, because it was held within the marriage.
Now, if the surviving spouse, if the judgment was against them, then that changes it, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yeah,
so
that's
if we flip the script here, and the girlfriend, or I'm sorry, the wife passes away, and the husband is the one who has the judgment against him, and the property goes all to the husband, then
all of
the judgment, right? Yeah. Then the judgment creditor would then have the right to force the sale of the property in whole, not in part.
Right. Okay. So again, those are some of the significant differences. But we've talked around tenants in common, but pretty much I think explained a lot of it. But let's just start fundamentally with what that is.
Well, tenants in common is an undivided interest in property, and it can be 50-50, a third, and a third. It can be an eighth, an eighth, an eighth, an eighth, an eighth. I mean, it can be any percentage.
Right.
It can be different.
And different percentages.
It can be 10%,
90%. Right.
Right. And it's called an undivided interest. One of the most, there's so many things to talk about this, which we will talk about.
Okay.
But one of the things that always is interesting to me is the fact that even though the property is undivided, there is law that says that you have the right to the whole.
Right.
And so we get these questions all the time that, you know, we, you know, five of us inherited this property. We five children. But my sister has gone over there and is completely occupying the property. You know, she's there all the time. She is in the house.
Right. So
the rest of us are not in the house.
So we don't want to pay the taxes on it.
Right. Right.
That's
well,
it comes
you know,
up, right?
Guess what? Unfortunately, the sister has the right.
Mm-hmm.
To go and stay on that property like that, to the exclusion of the other undivided interest holders,
but based on real property.
They could all move
but
in
the
too,
others could move in too if they wanted to.
Yeah, right.
They
could as well.
I mean, legally they could. They just wouldn't want to.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Right.
Well, we'll come back to that scenario and others too in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can find them online at harvellandcollins.com and 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City at 726-9050. And we're back talking about tenants in common now, too, and the scenario where somebody as a family has inherited property. Now, what do they do when they don't get along?
Well, again, the origin of this kind of title most likely is going to be that either, you know, partners bought property. You know, three people go together and buy property, a third, a third, and a third. Or family members have inherited the property, as we discussed before, through some estate. They have inherited this tract of land or this home, you know, all three children, a third, a third, and a third.
Right.
You know, the will was very generic. It simply said, I hereby devise, bequeath all of my real property equally to my children. And that's what the title searcher would find. The title searcher would find that the property was titled in the name of Mr. Jones. Mrs. Jones had died first. It was tenants by entirety. The property went to Mr. Jones. And then, you know, 7 years later, he dies with the will that leaves the property equally to his children. Okay. The estate was properly opened, and it was properly closed. There was notice to creditors, if you will. And the proper, you know, accountings were made. Again, estate opened, estate closed, the title passed a third, a third, and a third. And so now these three children own the property together. The sister, of course, decides that she's the one that's going to be, she's the entitled one that's going to live there.
That's right.
Okay, so right. She lives there to the exclusion of her brothers. Well, you know, as I said, she has the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the story doesn't end there. You know, mm-hmm. It never does, okay?
Yeah, it never does, yeah.
The story doesn't end there because let's say that she's destroying the property in mm-hmm. some way. Let's say she's taking advantage of the property. Let's say that she decides to rent the property and receive rent mm-hmm. individually for the property and not divide it with her brothers. There are all sorts of scenarios here now that we hear.
Mm-hmm.
And those would begin to change the rights of the other two owners of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But one thing is for sure, an undivided interest holder in property has this right to occupy the whole mm-hmm. of the property, even though it is undivided. Okay, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, and this happens, we can talk about this in the future, but it happens with commercial property,
mm-hmm.
I think, a lot too, right? Held in common.
Right.
And again, these scenarios require when they go bad, mm-hmm. when they go bad, they go really bad.
Now, I should use this because we get a lot of cases like this. Mm-hmm. I have three of them right now that I'm working on where, you know, I want to use the terminology that is used, which is that, you know, this is heir property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is what we as lawyers are told many
right.
times.
So right.
The client comes in, they start talking about what they want to do, and they say, Mr. Harvell, this is heir property, meaning we got it as an heir.
Right.
Through an estate,
mm-hmm.
all seven of us,
mm-hmm.
and one of us has now died, and his seventh went to his two children.
Right.
Okay. And the other one, one of the seven is going through a divorce. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
So what do we do with all this?
So what do we do with all of this?
Tune in next week here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. If you want to find out the right advice at the right time, you can contact Harvell and Collins online at harvellandcollins.com and 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and available at 252-726-9050.